Hello, my name is Carola Dunn, and I write mysteries.
Wonderful. And you've lived here in Eugene how long?
Nearly 20 years.
All right. So, as we were telling you, we're terribly interested in how people chose to or became writers. Do you remember your earliest experiences with writing or words or reading?
Well, I wrote in school, but I wrote because I had to write, and I never particularly enjoyed the process.
Ah.
And then when my son was little, I had a variety of odd jobs and part-time and temporary jobs. And then he was 9 years old and went off to school. I mean, he was in school all day, and we moved. And for the nth time, we kept moving constantly for his first 9 years. But we settled down, bought a house. And my now ex-husband decided it was time I decided what I wanted to do with my life. He had been telling me for years that I ought to write a book on the grounds that when I did his essays for his History of Civilization class, I got all A's. And he thought that meant I should write a book. So I decided if I was going to have to get a job, I'd just put it off as long as I could by doing what he had asked me to do and writing a book. So I sat down at the kitchen table and I wrote one.
A novel.
I wrote a Regency romance. I'd been reading Georgette Heyer for many years to the point where I knew exactly what was coming on the next page. And so I picked up a few Regencies that were being written at that time. That was the late 70s. And some of them were so truly awful that I figured I couldn't do worse. And if they were getting published, who knew? So I wrote a Regency. I wrote it at the kitchen table, longhand. I cleared up for meals. And much to my surprise, I actually finished it. And having finished it, I felt that it would be silly not to type it up and see if I could do something with it. But I didn't actually own a typewriter. So a kind friend offered to type it for me. And she got going on it. And she had two kids of her own, was a busy lady. And she did a bit here and a bit there. She also had a very aged typewriter, and all the capital letters were above the line.
Oh, yes, yes.
So when several months had passed and she reached, I think, the end of chapter 12, my birthday was coming up, so I asked for a typewriter. And I got a Sears graduate typewriter, which I now use as a footstool. And so I started typing it myself, and I was a bit mean to her because she actually, she stopped typing it for me at the point where the heroine says, "Charlie," and faints. And I refused to tell her what had happened, why she was in this condition until the book was finished. And so she had to wait, a year to find out. But having typed it up, I had a friend who was thinking of becoming a writer. She later became a non-fiction newspaper and magazine writer. And she had a book about how to get a book published. So we consulted it, and it said, send off three chapters, it said. Send off three chapters to at least four publishers. You should always have it out at least four publishers at a time. And a synopsis and a query letter. So I struggled and wrote a synopsis, which was much more difficult than writing the book. And I wrote a very good query letter. And I picked what I figured were the best three chapters and sent them off. And the book did not, in fact, say the first three chapters. It just said three chapters.
So you picked three
so
random chapters.
Three chapters. And of those first four, I got two rejections. There weren't all that many publishers doing Regencies, but I got two rejections. I got one that asked for the rest of the book and one that asked for the missing in-between chapters. So I sent those off, and I sent out the three chapters, etc., to a couple more publishers. And I can't remember exactly how it worked. One of those asked for the whole thing, and one of them was a rejection, as far as I remember, but this is over 30 years ago. And then one of the ones that had asked for the whole thing, they called me and said they wanted to buy it. That was Warner Books. Mm. And I mean, I was stunned.
And what year was that?
That was 79.
So, if you don't mind my asking...
No, that was 80. I wrote it in 79. Okay.
If you don't mind asking, how old were you then? Is that fair to ask?
You think I can figure it out?
Yeah.
33. So, yeah, I wrote it in 79, typed it in 80, sold it in 80, and it came out in 81. But the editor, having bought it and having got my signature on the contract, you said, of course, this is much longer than we publish Regencies. I mean, I hadn't a clue. I didn't know books were supposed to be a certain length, and I had no way of telling as I was writing longhand how long it was. I had no idea, but apparently it was about 96,000 words, and they wanted 75. So she said, so I'll have to cut it. And being a neophyte, not really knowing anything about it, I said, okay. I didn't even think of suggesting that if it was going to get cut, I was going to be the one who cut it. So she presumably went and read it again, and she ended up deciding that there wasn't anything to cut, that she could find, I think it was a page and a half total, that she could cut without leaving holes. So she cut the page in half, and they published it at a dollar more than their regular price.
Really? So the plot to that first book, how did you come across that plot? Was it a story you'd been...
No, it just worked out as I wrote, more or less. I started with just the sort of basic idea. It was a girl who... was found on the moors, and she'd lost her memory. I mean, your basic romantic plot. And I just went on writing from there. With a romance, you're going to have a happy ever after ending, so that's where you're aiming at.
Right.
But I've always found that as I write, characters come along. You know, you create a character to fill a specific need, and then they take on a life of their own, and they steer you in unexpected directions. And a character who's supposed to maybe walk in and say hello and then walk out again and never be seen again will become a real person. And that's what happened. So I had this whole complicated subplot with the hero's sister and the heroine's cousin. He was Charlie when she fainted. That was when she regained her memory. So that was just how it worked.
Do your characters, do they ever direct the action themselves within you? Do you ever find yourself going, oh, that makes a good sense, you know, when the character tells you something?
To some extent now. Used to be much more. Mm-hmm. I have much more control over my characters now, but they still do sort of pop up and direct things. There was my only book set in America, which is The Case of the Murdered Muckraker.
Great title.
It's Daisy's staying in a... Daisy is my main mystery character.
Right.
She is staying in a hotel in New York, and she's going up to her room in the elevator, the lift, mm-hmm. and... being Daisy, she says hello to the lift boy, the elevator boy, and he suddenly becomes a major character, which I wasn't expecting. She only spoke to him because that's what Daisy would do, you know. Yes. It turns out the chambermaid who's been overhearing things is his sister. And, I mean, that was a really complicated business because I wanted Daisy to meet Philo Vance. I don't know if you know Philo Vance, S.S. Van Dyne. Mm. S.S. Van Dyne is the pen name of a man who was writing mysteries set in New York in the 20s. I mean, he was writing contemporary mysteries. And Philo Vance is a pompous, over-intellectual twit. I mean, he's extreme. I find him extremely irritating. But I read the books doing research for Daisy in New York. And I thought it would be really fantastic if Daisy met Philo. I could really throw some sparks off there. But St. Martin's legal department could not find the copyright holder.
Ah.
And they couldn't find... They'd been republished, I think, in the 70s.
So copyright was current.
Yeah, but the then publisher hadn't sent out royalties for years and had no idea who they'd send them to if they did. The agent who had handled it at that time was dead or gone out of business or unfindable anyway. And they said, I couldn't use Philo Vance. You can't use someone else's character.
Right.
Without permission, and they said if I did, someone would crawl out of the woodwork and
that's right.
kick up a fuss. So I wasn't allowed to use Philo Vance, which is what I'd been planning on. And so I invented these two old ladies, one of whom had been the first female crime reporter in New York, and her rather dithery sister, and they were residents of the hotel.
What, over 50 books?
Over 50 books. I wrote 32 full-length Regencies.
Right.
And a bunch of novellas, which are now gathered together in... they were published in anthologies with other people's mm-hmm. works, but they're now in my own anthologies as e-books.
Mm.
In fact, all my Regencies are available as e-books.
Ah.
And so that's 32 plus... four collections.
So from longhand writing to e-books.
That's right.
Virtually the full spectrum.
That's right. And then the mysteries, the 20th Daisy mystery will be out in February. And I'm working on the third Cornish mystery. So, yeah, I've lost count. It's no good asking me. How many? So do I count the one that's in production? Do I count the one I'm writing now? Do I count the one I've got a contract for right. and haven't started writing yet? I mean,
it was yeah. fascinating to watch and to see in your blog the interactions that people have with your characters and
yeah.
stories.
Well, people really do. I hear a lot that people regard Daisy as a friend. Mm-hmm. They just like spending time with her, basically, and when they get to the end of the series, they're disappointed because they can't spend more time with her, and they're waiting for the next one, and can't I write faster? No, I can't.
I have to ask you, you light up when you talk about your characters. It's so delightful.
Well, they're real to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When I was doing some research for Mistletoe and Murder, the one that's set in Cornwall, the Daisy book that's set in Cornwall, and I was staying with my sister because it's set in... She lives near Coteheal, which is where it was set. And she took me into the little town whose name I still cannot remember. It's a small... used to be a mining village near Coteheal. And because I needed to look around. And she said, well, what exactly is it you're looking for? And I said, well, really, I just want to see the lie of the land, so to speak, but I'd like to take a look at the station because Tom and Ernie Piper arrived there. And she said, you talk about them as if they were real people. To me, they are. They
yeah.
really are. And those two have developed along with Daisy and Alec. They've changed over time, and particularly in the latest book, in Anthem for Doomed Youth. which has a lot more of the police side of things, the relationship between Alec and Tom and Ernie is really developing more.
You said that many of your ideas come as you're actually writing, and,
yes.
and it's generated. Are there other times, as an example, when I take a shower, some of my greatest insights come
yeah,
to me?
Yeah, it's difficult to write them down when you're in the shower.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah, I get a lot when I'm walking the dog. I walk by the Willamette every morning, and that's a good idea time. Well, any time, really. I mean, it's a 7:24 job. Your mind is going round it all the time. Two in the morning, and I have pads of paper all over the house.
How about journals? Have you kept journals?
No, I've never kept
a journal.
Never done any writing I didn't have to do. I mean, apart from the novels, which I now I've had to do for the last... When did I start? I guess when I got divorced, I started making a living at it.
Mm.
So, a good few years now.
Yeah.
I was still writing Regencies then. That's kind of interesting too, if, how it happened that I switched to mysteries, because I was making a living. It wasn't much of a living, but it was a living writing Regencies. And then within 6 months of each other, both the publishers I was writing for stopped publishing Regencies, and this is a hazard in the Regency line. They come and go. And that was the moment when I started writing mysteries. I kind of wanted to try something different for a while, but as long as I was making a living, I went on with the Regencies. So it was, in the end, it was a good thing that they both quit.
Well, had you had an interest in mysteries?
I've always read them,
mm-hmm.
I've always liked the Golden Age. Mysteries, the ones written between the wars, and, even after the war, up to maybe 1970.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that I don't read more recent ones, but I've been particularly fond of those earlier ones.
Do you have a particular favorite writer?
No.
Yeah.
No, I read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I really read a lot. I read a lot of mysteries and the general fiction. And one thing I don't read is romance. I never read any kind of romance other than Regency, but now I really don't read any at all.
Mm-hmm.
I read non-fiction. I read history history besides research. And I read, I like science. Reading books about science, and I get Discover magazine. So I'm reading constantly, and I couldn't possibly pick a favorite author.
Can you just address how has that technology changed your writing from those days of longhand and a friend who was a typist? Has it made a difference in the way you write?
Well, it's made it a whole lot easier to change things. If you saw my first manuscript with all the circles and stars and lines, and it's made life much easier. But I think now, really, Facebook I find a huge distraction. I find it useful, and I find I'm in touch with a lot of readers and a lot of other writers, but I spend far too much time on it.
On Facebook. In terms of research on computers?
With my first computer, it had nothing to do with research. I mean, it was strictly a mechanical typing.
An advanced typewriter.
And then, for quite a few years, I found it more useful once we got the internet and email. I found it more useful for getting in touch with people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there just wasn't that much information actually available. In fact, I did when I wrote The Flying Scotsman, Murder on the Flying Scotsman, my mother somehow, and I have no idea how, found a man who had worked on The Flying Scotsman. He was a steward on the Flying Scotsman, not in the 20s, in the 50s, 40s, 50s. But he was also a member of the Historical Model Railway Society. And he had all the research books right there. And he could tell me things like the order they assembled the trains and the colours of the seats in first and third class and the pictures they had on the Ooh. Walls of the compartments, all this stuff. And he and I were in contact by letter. And it was a very painful business because... partly just because I hated asking him questions that would involve long, complex answers that he had to, as an old man. And
he wasn't afraid of details, probably.
Oh, he loved looking up details. No one else was interested in all this stuff, except his fellow members.
Right.
And to find someone who actually wanted to know this stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was how I used the internet at first, far more than looking up information. Now, of course, there's so much information actually out there that the real difficulty is framing your search correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And you can search for something with the same three words in a different order and you'll get completely different stuff. And sometimes I just can't find anything and then I'll send out a plea on one of the e-lists I'm on and someone else will word the query some slightly differently and find all this information I just could not find.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
I suppose it's their algorithms or something.
If there were a young aspiring writer, a 20-year-old fresh out of college who had the skills and knew how to conjugate verbs and do all the proper things and wanted to spend a life
as a writer.
There's a lot of
writers out there who don't know how to conjugate verbs.
True enough.
I've just been reading a book, Lay and Lie. It drives me crazy.
Oh, yes. Yes.
These writers who have all these credentials and they don't know the difference between lay and lie.
Right, that's right. What a chicken does and what...
We've got this young writer who does know how to conjugate his verbs.
So, would you have any... words of inspiration, advice, or caution that you would ever give to such a
person?
Well,
the advice I usually give is, there's two pieces of advice. The first is that there are three things you need to be a writer. There's talent, luck, and persistence. You can get away with two of the three, but the only one you control is persistence. And that does in no way apply to me because I went on pure luck. And if I hadn't sold that first book, I probably would have gone out and got a job and never written again. But, okay, that's the first piece of advice. And the second piece of advice is a quotation from Somerset Maugham, who said, "There are three rules for writing the novel. Unfortunately, no one knows what they are."
That's right. Yes, we actually have that quotation in our list of things for the Author's Road. Yeah, it's a great one. Do you have a sense about where the future of writing and reading is going to be going, given all this change?
I have no idea. I'm only glad I'm not starting out now. I really am glad I'm not starting out now.
Yeah.
As it is, I'm profiting from the e-book thing. I'm doing very nicely with the e-books. For my regencies, which would all be out of print and long forgotten without.
So you're getting a second shot at those.
I'm getting a second shot. They're also coming out in large print, but the e-books are really doing well since they've been on Amazon. I have no desire to, for instance, take Daisy away from Minotaur and do it as an e-book on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was starting out now, I might be going that way. I really don't know. I really don't know. And I'm so glad I'm not starting out
right.
now. Or worse, having just started out and, having maybe two or three books and having to decide which way to go. I really don't know.
When you were growing up, what did you read? Did you have any special books?
I just read constantly. I had a torch under the bedclothes. I was your typical bookworm. I had to be chased outside to play. I'd go hide in a corner at school so that they didn't make me go out at recess. Yeah, I read everything. And my mother never tried to stop me reading everything.
Ah, good.
I read whatever I came across. The books that I go back to over and over again are Jane Austen and Lord of the Rings.
Mm.
And there are other books I reread occasionally. I love The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. I've read that several times, as you might guess, with my dog being
right
called after that. But
and the others in that series?
Oh, all of them, yeah, yes, all yeah. three, all five, all seven.
So
what
long
is it?
And
five books in the trilogy.
So long and thanks for the fish. Love that.
The restaurant at the end of the right. universe, yes. Yeah, I love those.
Do you write every day?
Not Sundays. Sundays are laundry and yard work. But 6 days a week, yes.
And do you have a specific time that you go to work at?
I go to work when I get there, so to speak. I walk the dog first thing. Mm-hmm. Then I come home and have breakfast and read the paper. Then when I get to the computer, it's usually around 9 o'clock.
Mm.
And then I take a break for lunch, obviously, and usually run errands if I have errands to run at that time. Mm-hmm. Then write till about 5. But I've been late for my deadlines on the last 3 books, so.
But it's,
I blame Facebook.
Yes. In our household, we call it sock drawer behavior. It's Sally was trying
I'd
to
rather
do,
go and rearrange my sock drawer than write
exactly.
another sentence.
Yes, because
yeah.
it's so. It just bothers me that they're out of order. I really want to thank you, and we really want to thank you. It's been quite insightful, and I have to tell you, like I said, that just seeing you light up when you talk about your characters, that is such a refreshing thing,
uh-huh.
and that. That they are such good friends to you.
They really are.
Yeah. And so
because that's something I haven't mentioned, but I write, my fiction is, it's got serious side to it because you can't have murder without being serious about it. But it's on the whole lighthearted. The books tend to end on a light note. And I write mostly about nice people. And very often even my villains are nice people. And that's one thing I enjoy, is exploring why a nice person would commit murder. I don't want to write about serial killers or madmen. I'm not interested in why madmen kill. They kill because they're mad. But also, I do not want to live with nasty people in my mind. I'm living with these people 24 hours a day, and I want people I like in my
right.
head.
And your readers do too.
Good.
That's neat. That's wonderful. Well, thank you again so much.
You're very welcome.
Quite pleasant.
It's been very interesting.
And if sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I will have the opportunity to edit and get this up.
Yeah,
finding,
no rush.
Yeah, finding,
I've got to finish this book.
And please don't let us be your sock drawer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.